Radio.
You're listening to PetLifeRadio.com.
Is your pet stressed out? Does your pet need annual vaccines? Which pet is best for a child? Would you know if your dog was in pain? Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor, where you'll learn everything about keeping your pet healthy and happy. From pet care, pet meds, and grooming, to pet food, pet insurance, and dental care. This is the place to find out everything there is to know about pet wellness. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile, or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets. Because your pet health matters. Please welcome your pet doctor host, veterinary media consultant, and veterinarian, Dr. Bernadine Cruz.
If you've ever said to yourself that you'd love a career that combines your love of animals, a desire to improve the health of people as well as animals, and one that challenges your mind, you don't have to be a veterinarian. You might want to consider the field of veterinary technology. Registered veterinary technicians are skilled professionals that work in veterinary hospitals as well as in the field. They play an essential role in research laboratories and diagnostic companies. The RVTs are also in the military as well as help to protect the environment with the work they do with wildlife conservation. Today's guest is Cheryl Ann Geitzke, a registered veterinary technician at the Mayo Clinic in Minnesota. We'll be right back after this message.
Please have a seat in the waiting room. The doctor will be with you shortly, right after these messages.
Welcome to Personals.com. As a fellow cat owner, I know how finicky we are, from our friendships to our loves to just about everything. Not any old website is going to satisfy us. Here at Personals.com, cat lovers from all walks of life can celebrate the photos, the stories, and videos of their beloved family member. And if you're single, here's your chance to meet someone who's perfect for you. Share your personality today for free. See you soon.
Personals.com. That's PURRSONALS.com. Finally, a place to meet that special person.
Flight 291 is now boarding. All passengers, please proceed to gate 4.
And who's this traveling with us today?
This is Bailey. She's never flown Midwest Airlines before.
Hi, Bailey. She'll be fine. We take special care of our traveling pets. In fact, our Premier Pet Program was created by an employee and dog lover who believes that pets should be handled as precious cargo. And they are. Oh, and they earn travel rewards too.
Oh, good.
Thanks for flying Midwest Airlines, Bailey. Enjoy your flight. Visit MidwestAirlines.com.
Pets are part of the family, and when traveling with your dog, there's only one magazine to include when packing your doggie's duffel bag, and that's Fido Friendly, the travel and lifestyle magazine for you and your dog. Each bi-monthly issue includes hotel, city and state reviews, and doggy destinations to explore with your furry companion. Fido Friendly magazine can be found at Borders, Barnes & Noble, PetSmart, Pet Boutiques, and Fido Friendly hotels nationwide. Or you can go online to subscribe at www.FidoFriendly.com. So get traveling with your pet today and leave no dog behind. And remember, Fido Friendly's the only magazine dedicated to the travel lifestyle of man's best friend and the one magazine your dog will thank you for.
Stop what you're doing and start horsing around. Every week on Pet Life Radio, horse expert and award-winning rider Audrey Pavia will be trotting out great tips on feeding, breeding, and more on everything equestrian. So set a spell and say hey to Audrey and get ready for a darn tootin' galloping good time. Every week on Horsing Around, on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.
Let's Talk Pets on PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back to The Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio with Dr. Bernadine Cruz. The doctor is in and will see you now.
Well, Cheryl Ann, thank you so much for being with us today. You just have a fascinating job. How did you get into research?
Well, part of being a vet tech student is doing an internship, and my internship happened to be at the Mayo Clinic. When I took it, I was just thinking of getting through my internship and graduating, but the career that I found, the excitement, the variety, the fact that they could use me and I was, you know, working, it was so exciting, I decided to stay in that field.
So this is the Mayo Clinic, correct?
It is, yes.
So many people might not think that they would be using animals at the Mayo Clinic. What are some of your responsibilities?
Well, to be honest, almost every hospital has a biomedical research going on because, you know, part of a hospital's mission is to end disease, and using animals in biomedical research is one way to go about that. So the animals need to be taken care of. So the veterinary technicians or veterinary technologists, they do basic rounds, they help out in surgery, they care for the animals, they assist the researchers who have animals on study. There's quite a variety of things to do.
What are some of the various animals that you work with?
95% of the animals that are used in research are rodents, mice and rats. But there are quite a variety of animals, from guinea pigs, you know, all the rodents, the mice, rats, guinea pigs. There's rabbits. We work with frogs. There's large animals like pigs and goats. There's occasionally horses and donkeys. There are dogs and cats. There's ferrets. We've had studies with opossums, alligators. It just sort of depends on what the best animal model is for the disease that they're studying.
Alligators. I don't know if I'd want to be involved in that particular study.
You learn some very creative ways of working with things.
So this really must be a constant learning challenge for you, because things are always different. All these various animals that you work with, is this something that you learned in school, or has it been pretty much on the job for you?
The veterinary technology program that I attended, which was an AVMA-accredited program, had exposed us to a wide variety of information, species, and experiences. I would say it produced a vet tech at an introductory level, but I have picked up probably some of the more unique skills while I was working at the clinic. I think that my education allowed me to pick these skills up and understand them from a science basis, and I would not want to go into this job without having that 2-year degree behind me.
So thank you. That was a question I was going to ask. So to become a registered veterinary technician, it's a 2-year course. You'd mentioned also that it was an AVMA accredited school that you went to. How many schools offhand do you know are there in the United States, and are most of the programs 2 years?
The AVMA has, I believe it's in the 120 plus range accredited programs. There are other programs that are not accredited, but there are a lot of schools putting out a lot of vet techs into the public. You know, veterinary medicine is a varied field. There's a lot of different options for veterinary technicians, and the demand is bigger than the supply.
I know myself, being in a companion animal practice, and we do have a registered veterinary technician, and sometimes some of the other technicians, people who've been in the field for an extended period of time, have a lot of experience, they can be a little bit miffed, and we can talk about some of the other team members, but they're not allowed by law to do some of the procedures that a registered technician can do, just because, as you're saying, you do have that education, and you do also have a licensing procedure that you need to go through. Since you went through that schooling situation and your internship happened to be at the Mayo Clinic, how about some of your classmates? Where did they go? What are they doing with their careers?
I had a lot of my classmates that went into small animal medicine. So they work in a small animal clinic. Being that I went to school in southern Minnesota, there's also a lot of farmland around here. And there's a good majority of the people worked in either mixed clinics or large animal clinics as well. So there weren't a whole lot of us that went into, you know, what you might consider an alternative type of career for veterinary technicians. Most of them stayed within a clinic structure.
Why did you stay in what you're doing? I can imagine it is absolutely fascinating. Don't you miss, however, not working with cats and dogs?
You know, I really like the fact that I am making a difference, not just in animal lives, but in the lives of people, because the animals that I'm working with are being used to help solve medical problems. And when I see people walking around in the clinic and I know that the work I'm doing might be helping them to get better, that really is a very fulfilling thing. And, you know, I get to work with all kinds of animals at Mayo, and I think that my interactions are very satisfying, and so I don't specifically miss working with pets.
Because you have your own pets at home, I'm sure.
I do. One of them is being quite naughty right now.
Yes, of course.
I have my own pet. Yeah, that's kind of typical, isn't it?
You're mentioning right now working with all of these various animals and knowing that they're helping people. Animal research is an area filled with tremendous amount of controversy. There's so many people so adamantly opposed to the use of animals, saying, well, why can't we just use a computer model? Why can't we just use cell culture cells that are in petri dishes? What are your views being a registered veterinary technician and the use of animals?
Well, I believe that it is necessary, and I think that if it's done according to the regulations that are out there, of which there are very many, that it is appropriate and it is well worth doing. You know, it would be great if we didn't have to use animal models, but the bottom line is that computer models and cell cultures don't provide whole system interactions the way that animal use and biomedical research does. And so I think that the necessity for a living organism to examine what the scientists are looking at is the bottom line. You have to do that in order to solve the problems that they're looking at. There's a lot of people that oppose it, but I think that a lot of times people are misinformed or they misunderstand what's happening. And if they were aware of how highly regulated the field is and how well the animals are taken care of, that might solve some misconceptions.
Well, Cheryl Ann, as you were talking about these various animals that you're using and the amount of regulations that are there trying to make sure that they are handled as humanely as possible, what I think a lot of people don't understand is that you really do need to keep the stress that these animals are under really to a minimum, since stress affects so many of their body systems, as it does ours, oftentimes in very adverse ways. So you working with these animals, I'm sure you there as a professional are making sure that all your doctors, MDs as well as veterinarians, are treating them with as much empathy and compassion as possible.
That's an excellent point, Dr. Cruz, because the bottom line is if you want to use something as a model for your research, you want to get rid of all variables so that you can study exactly what you need to study. And things like stress or pain or not having proper food or water, that is a variable that messes up the animal model. So not just from a humane standpoint, but from a scientific standpoint, the animals need to be treated well so that they react physiologically in an appropriate manner. So you're absolutely right. My job is to make sure the animals are healthy and happy so that they are good animal models.
You have such a specialized area that you're involved with. Being a registered veterinary technician, what are some of the other specialty areas that your career is allowing you to get into? I know you're not into it, but there are others who have gone into these other specialized areas. Could you comment on that a bit?
Oh, I can, because there's so many of them. Veterinary technology has just been expanding in leaps and bounds, and I have colleagues that are educators. They work in the veterinary technology programs. I have colleagues who work in industry, either as sales reps or, you know, in product development. There's government work, taking care of military animals, working for the USDA with disaster relief or preventing disease outbreaks. There's vet techs that are business owners, dog grooming, boarding, pet sitting, people that want to be speakers or technical writers, in expanding into the business area, vet techs that are working as executive directors for state organizations. And, also, if you look at clinic situations, there's so many clinics that are dealing with specific species or, specialties based on geography, that there's just as much diversity in the clinic settings, too. So, I could probably go on and on, but there's a lot of variety out there. So you can find what interests you and find your niche in this field.
What I find is fascinating is many people don't realize that there are quite a few different specialty organizations, colleges for veterinarians. So you could become a registered veterinarian that goes into dentistry or goes into cardiology, internal medicine, or into behavior. But also now for veterinary technicians, those same type of academies are available for you to specialize in. So I know they have veterinary technicians who are now anesthetists. So they are controlling, just like having a nurse anesthetist, that's easier for me to say, to oversee an animal being under anesthesia. Dental technicians, dentistry in animals is just expanding the root canals. They're doing it in tigers as well as, in dogs. So dentistry is really fascinating. Then there's internal medicine, equine veterinary technicians. Those are on the track, as well as the mobile veterinary clinics that are out there taking care of the horses in your backyard. So it is just fascinating. So you don't have to be a veterinarian. You can still be out there and really be a part of the team. Again, could you mention how many years of schooling and what's the background before you get into that schooling?
Well, most of the programs allow you to enter with a high school degree. They want to make sure that you have a solid understanding of math and science, because the programs are very difficult. There is a misconception sometimes that vet techs are the people that pet the puppies and the kittens, but it's about science. It's about technical knowledge that you learn, and the programs typically are 2 years long. There are a number of four-year programs in the country. When you graduate from those programs, depending on the job you go into, you may need additional training. In biomedical research, I got my job with my two-year degree, but once I was on the job for a while, my employers requested that I take a certification exam to become ALAS certified, American Association of Lab Animal Science. They have different levels of credentialing that proves, minimum standards type of thing. So depending on where you work, there could be additional education required, or as you were saying, in the case of the specialties, just a certain number of years on the job, learning the intricacies of that particular specialty, and then passing an exam that shows that you've mastered those intricacies. It starts out with a two-year degree, but there's continual education that needs to be taken if you are a veterinary technologist.
After all of this education, a lot of people are thinking, how much money can you make in this kind of a field? What are the salaries like for a veterinary technician compared to someone else who spent 2 years and now has an AA degree, for instance?
It's really hard to pin that down, because it depends what part of the country you're in, whether you're rural or urban. It also depends what specialty, what type of work you're going into. In general, people that work in small animal clinics or mixed practice clinics don't make as much as the vet techs that work in industry or research. It's getting better, but I do think that probably if I were to compare it to other technical degrees, veterinary technology is lagging behind.
Well, hopefully that will change, because it is an area that we need registered veterinary technicians critically throughout the United States. Kind of changing gears a little bit as to some of the other careers that people may be looking into, saying, gee, I want to get involved with animals. Two-year technology program is something I might consider, but what else is out there? Myself having a small animal practice, we do need those people that pet the animals, and oftentimes those are the kennel workers. So that would be a person who takes care of the animals, cleans them, feeds them, and oftentimes they're extremely important because they're with that animal much more so than the technician or the veterinarian. So if they notice a problem with an animal, they can bring it to our attention. We can treat it appropriately. Then you do have the veterinary technician, such as yourself. Then oftentimes the veterinary assistant, who doesn't have that technical training, but many times just lots of years on the job. Veterinary hospital managers, you mentioned that some of the RVTs are hospital managers. There's training that they can go through. They're critically important to make sure that the hospital business side runs very smoothly. And then, you know, the person that kind of oversees all of this, the veterinarian. So we really do need to work for a team. And it sounds as though you love what you're doing.
I do. And there's a similar structure in research. It does come down to team effort. You have the veterinarian at the top that is overseeing the operation, veterinary technicians, veterinary assistants, the kennel workers, the desk people, and every single one of those jobs is critical to a well-functioning situation, whether it's a clinic or a research scenario. I think the teamwork concept, it's so important for even, you know, the general public to understand that each of these players has a specific role and they're different, but they all work together for the best case scenario for animal care.
Well, Cheryl Ann Geiske, you've given us some great information. If people want more information on how to become a registered veterinary technician, do you have some sites that they could go to?
The National Association of Veterinary Technicians in America, NAVTA, has a website that has all kinds of great background information on veterinary technicians. The American Veterinary Medical Association, the AVMA, has lists of programs and locations for them. Each state has their own state board of veterinary medicine that probably has a website that would let you know what the laws are for your state as far as practicing veterinary technology. And those are the big ones. You could probably get a lot of information out of those sites.
And when in doubt, ask your own veterinarian if you have a cat or a dog or a horse. I'm sure they can give you information too. So if you want a challenging career, one that you care about animals, enjoy working with your hands, possess some good basic math skills, good at making some decisions, because decisions oftentimes come down to you making them now, like working with people and handling responsibilities, a career in veterinary technology may be just the right job for you. So my guest today has been Cheryl Ann Geiske. She is a registered veterinary technician working at the Mayo Clinic in animal research. Thank you very much, Cheryl Ann, for being with us. You've given us just some great information.
Thanks, Dr. Cruz. I had a great time.
Well, stay tuned. After this short message, we'll be back with Mary Andell from the Orange County Register talking about some books in review. Hold on. We'll be right back.
Please have a seat in the waiting room. The doctor will be with you shortly, right after these messages.
Ready to take a walk? Not just you, but your whole family. It's the 2008 Whisker Walk, Sunday, June 8th from 9 to 4 at the Lancaster Fairground in Lancaster, Massachusetts. Pet owners and animal lovers walk to lend a paw to benefit the animal shelters and pet charities they love. Come see exhibits, demonstrations, educational programs, special attractions, product giveaways, entertainment, auctions, raffles, food, fun, and things for adults and kids to see, do, and buy, both human and pet-related. Whisker Walk 2008, a fun day for everyone. For more information, log on to whiskerwalk.org.
Greetings, human. What planet am I on? Welcome to Pet Planet. Here's a copy of Pet Planet Magazine, Florida's most informative and fun pet resource magazine. It features heartwarming stories and informative articles from local and national pet experts.
Excellent.
Pet Planet Magazine offers Operation Planet Rescue, helping rescued pets find new homes. And it's available at 500 locations in South and Central Florida and 24/7 on the internet at PetPlanetMagazine.com. If you're out and about with your pet, you may be featured in paparazzi, candid pictures of you and your pet. For up-to-date pet-friendly events, activities, and pet-related services and products, Pet Planet Magazine is your final destination.
I shall take this magazine home with me.
Back to your home planet?
No, to my condo in Boca.
Pet Planet Magazine. Check them out at www.petplanetmagazine.com or 352-394-8578. It's out of this world.
Having a rough day? Longing for the dog days of summer? Think your fun furry friend lives a dog's life? Well, find out everything you're begging to know as Pet Life Radio presents It's a Doggy Dog World with pet expert and award-winning author Liz Palaika. Every dog has his day, and you'll find out how to make your dog's day fun and rewarding every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com. Let's Talk Pets on PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back to The Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio with Dr. Bernadine Cruz. The doctor is in and will see you now.
Move over, Puggles. The newest craze is the designer cat. Have you always loved the look of tigers and leopards, but really shouldn't own one? Well, breeders are now breeding domestic cats to some of their wild relatives and producing some gorgeous kitties. But are these kitties just bigger fur balls, or does their louder purr hide a potentially dangerous flaw? Marianne Dell, columnist for the Orange County Register in California, will discuss this new trend in selective breeding along with her monthly pet-related book review. So, Marianne, thank you very much for being with us today.
You're welcome, Dr. Cruz. As always, it's good to be here.
And you have some great books for us today?
Of course. Absolutely.
I need some new ones.
Okay, well, I've got some new ones and some not quite so new ones, but good ones.
All right. So what should I pick up first at the bookstore?
Well, this is a great little story. It's called The Chocolate Cat.
Ooh, yummy.
It's by Sue Stanton with some very beautiful illustrations by Anne Mortimer. The publisher is Catherine Tegan Books. It's $16.99 and for ages 4 to 7. And it's a story about a chocolatier in a very dull little village. And he's a very dull chocolatier, if you can imagine such a thing, working with chocolate all day and you're a dull person and you don't care about what you do. He really doesn't like his job. He's not particularly happy. And his cat, who shares the chocolate shop with him, isn't particularly happy either. And we know how that goes as pet owners, right? We do sort of influence our pet's feelings a lot of times. And one day, the chocolate maker makes these little chocolate mice with pink sugar tails. And the cat looks at them and thinks, those are absolutely beautiful. Now, the cat doesn't eat them. He decides to take them to other people to eat. And he takes them to various people in the village. And when he takes them to them, suddenly their lives, their stores, whatever they're selling, becomes sort of magical when they eat these mice. And eventually, the cat manages, through distributing these beautiful mice that his chocolatier owner makes, to change the life of the village. And it becomes no longer drab, but a wonderful place with all kinds of good things going on. And it's, you know, it can be, this book can be that, a nice, cute little story, or it can also be an allegory talking about how if you don't give up, if you remain optimistic, you can create wonderful things in your life, and attitude really has so much to do with how the world spins for you.
I love it. Attitude definitely makes a major difference no matter what's going on in your life, but I can just imagine this kitty with this little mouse in his mouth and taking it to the neighbors. They might initially not appreciate it. I know every once in a while my kitties get outside and they tend to bring me little presents, but never a chocolate mouse. Maybe for Mother's Day they might do that.
Yes, kitties don't ever bring us anything quite so nice as that, do they? That we
No, they don't. And I'm glad that you mentioned the cat does not eat these little chocolate mice, because we know chocolate, cats, and dogs is not a good match at all.
That's right. And that's another neat little side part to this book. You know, the cat doesn't eat the chocolate, and isn't it nice that he knows that?
Smart kitty. Yep. So this is The Chocolate Cat by Sue Stanton, 1699, for ages 4 through 7. And what other yummy things do you have?
All right. This one is a great little book for all kinds of ages. It's for about 5 and up as far as the reading level goes. It's called W is for Wolf, A Dog Alphabet. And it's a series of alphabet-type books that have various subjects. This one is all about all things canine. It's by Ruth Strother, published by Sleeping Bear Press, and it's 1795. And for each letter of the alphabet, the author explains something about the dog's world. So, for example, S is for strays in shelters. And on one page, she will have a simple little poem, like this one is, some dogs are lucky, they have loving homes. Others have nowhere to go, so they roam. Shelters step in with wide open arms, keeping these rovers safe from harm. Very simple explanation of what shelters do that a lower level or younger reader could read. Then on the facing page, she has a several paragraph narrative that older readers could read, that parents could read and either read to their younger children or paraphrase for them, that goes into greater depth. The S narrative about shelters and strays, for example, talks about how shelters are overflowing with strays, how the solution to this primarily is spaying and neutering. And so she also talks about how many animals are euthanized every year. My dog wants to take part in the conversation, obviously.
He's reading the pages, yes.
That's right. He's trying to butt in here and tell me that he likes shelters because that's where he came from. But it's nice because she really educates with this book. She does. She has the cute little rhymes, which are, you know, great for younger readers, younger kids. But there's really some good education and some good information in it. She talks about behavior, therapy dogs, grooming, working dogs, what kind of work they do, and why maybe they don't make the best pet for everybody. So it's really a nice little primer. Actually, even just for someone who's a family who maybe has never had a dog and is considering getting one, it's a nice book to start with to just sit down and read together and gather some of the information that's in it so that you can think and make an informed decision.
This sounds wonderful. Now, does Ruth Strother also have one for cats?
I believe there is a cat's book. I'm not certain it's by her. I think they're by different authors. But there's quite a few different topics.
A fun, unique way of teaching children and learning how to read and learning about animals.
Absolutely.
You find great books.
Yeah.
I'm not sure how you find them.
Oh, I have my ways. And, you know, one of the things is I've collected kids' books about animals, particularly dogs, for years. I just love them. And some of these I have. In fact, I have one on the list today that is in my own library. And it's not a particularly new one, but it's a fun book.
And what's the one from your library?
Okay. It's called Dog Breath, The Horrible Trouble with Halitosis.
I have that in my library also.
I actually somewhere, I don't remember where I got it, I actually picked up an autographed signed copy of it, so that's kind of cool. I always like having signed books. That's fun. The author is Dav Pilkey, and I think at one time did a comic strip. He has done illustrations for various things through the years. And some people might recognize his work, you know, in the book because it's, like many illustrators, very similar. The book is published by Blue Sky Press. It's $12.95, and the reading level is ages 5 to 8. And one of the reasons I like this book is the illustrations. They're just cute. Hallie is the dog who belongs to the Tosis family. And, of course, you know, there's the first lesson for young readers. Halitosis means bad breath. So we can guess what the issue with Hallie is. Her breath is enough to knock out a rhinoceros. And as often happens in these kinds of books. And it's an issue that I do, it's a topic I do take some issue with, but I still like this book because the illustrations are so cute, and I think that this topic can be used as a learning tool. Hallie's family says, you know, we love her, we really do, but we can't keep her here. She just can't live with this stench. So the kids of the family who don't want Hallie going anywhere take her on a series of adventures to try to get rid of this breath. They take her on rides that are guaranteed to take your breath away and take her to see sights that are guaranteed to astound you and startle you, hoping that that will scare the bad breath out of her. And, of course, nothing works. And everyone's very glum until one night everyone's asleep and a couple of burglars slip into the house. And Hallie, being a dog, of course, wakes up. And you can probably guess what happens after that. If she can knock out a rhinoceros, a couple of burglars are no small feat. And after that, the family, of course, decides, well, maybe we should keep, forget the breath, who cares, Hallie's wonderful, we'll keep her around. And the lesson is for parents to remind children that you never give an animal up. If you take it in, you take it in regardless of what happens. Bad breath, stinky feet, whatever. You've made a commitment and you need to retain that commitment.
Totally agree, because so many times people don't realize that when you take a pet, it's for life, their life.
Right.
And sometimes they don't always fit in with your lifestyle. If you have an animal, for instance, that has a bad skin condition, oh, it stinks, just throw it outside. That's not the answer. It needs to be addressed because there's some medical issue. So maybe this little Hallie with its bad breath really need to have its teeth cleaned. And people don't realize that bad teeth, besides giving you halitosis, can actually be a source of infection for the entire body. Getting the animal's teeth cleaned is so important for their general health. And so if it does have burglars come in the house, hopefully it can scare them off in other ways versus knocking them over with their bad breath.
That's right. Like my dog with his big, deep bark.
Yes, definitely. I would not break into your home.
No, I don't think anyone would. I hope not anyway. I have a little foster dog here who's got terrible skin, and I can tell from the way he acts that he's been an outdoor dog, and I probably exactly like you said. He wound up being an outdoor dog because his skin probably smelled, and then he ended up getting loose.
So, and then he ended up coming to you, so I'm sure
indeed
that you will do all you can to make him better. I think another reason why a burglar coming through the door now, they see some of these designer cats, may opt to go the other direction, because some of these kitties are huge.
Yes, they are.
And not always the nicest kitties in the world either.
Well, according to a story by one of our reporters at the Register, Gary Robbins, Gary was walking down on Sunset Beach one day, and he was telling me he saw this cat that looked pretty much like a normal cat, but he said it had to weigh 35 pounds. And he started talking to the owner, and it turns out it was a cat called an Ashera, which the owner paid tens of thousands of dollars for. And the cats, along with some quote-unquote designer dogs, and I mean, we're not talking about the Labradoodles, Puggles, those kind of designer dogs. We're talking about a $120,000 protection dog that is, according to the website for the company, guaranteed to protect your family. These are massively expensive animals, and as far as the cats go, they reportedly are mixing a civet, both of which are not domestic cats, and a domestic cat to get this animal. And Gary found a family in South Orange County who purchased one of these because it was, another of my pet peeves here, it was being auctioned off at a charity event. And nobody bid on the cat, but the family's children fell in love with it, and they wound up buying a cat from this company and paid, again, I believe $22,000 for the cat. And one of the comments that one of the parents made was, how, you know, it's a little bit different, but so far it's been okay. But, you know, obviously if it did something to one of our kids, we'd get rid of it. Well, what were we just talking about? Pet ownership, taking on responsibility for an animal being responsibility for life. And anyone who's worked with or owned a hybrid dog, a wolf-dog combination, knows that many of these animals are so uncomfortable in their own skin that putting them in the confines of a living situation, particularly somewhere like Southern California where there's no room to roam, nor is it safe to roam, these animals are miserable, and they end up being turned over to sanctuaries. Tippi Hedren up at Shambhala has some of these wild domestic cat mixes that have been turned over to her because people abandoned them or couldn't deal with them any longer.
I've had the opportunity myself to work with a Savannah cat, and a Savannah cat, I can't remember exactly what the combination is, but it was gorgeous. It was a very young cat, an extremely strong cat, and though it looks somewhat like a domesticated kitty, and yes, part of the genetics is from a very well-behaved, long, over centuries of time domesticated animal, mixing in that wild blood, they really are animals that are not domestic cats. In behavior, attitude, the way they interact with the family, they can be dangerous. And this particular cat had to be declawed. The owner at that time wanted to have the teeth trimmed down. We said, oh no, don't do that. You need to speak to somebody, a behaviorist, because these cats can be so strong and very aggressive. As you said, these animals sometimes are then relinquished to preserves or shelters and trying to give their problems away. And it's just not fair. There are so many thousands and thousands of cats, domesticated cats at shelters that need homes. And the price tag for these kitties is so high. Are you aware of any medical conditions that they have?
I'm not. You know, the interesting thing, there's a debate going on that some people are saying these Ashera cats actually are Savannahs. And, you know, I'm not enough of an expert to say whether, you know, who's right and who's wrong there. Some people are saying that the people who breed these Asheras are actually just trying to sell people Savannahs under a different name. But, with the wolf hybrids, from my experience with them, and it's very limited, I haven't known of any major, inherent or congenital health issues with them. It might be that mixing the different species, because you have a bigger gene pool, maybe they're healthier. But gosh, that's not a reason to do this in my book. There's a lot of healthy animals out there anyway. And as you say, how many millions die in our shelters every year?
Their look is gorgeous. Their attitude, if you want something that is exotic, these are the animals. But the complications that can come from owning them, I think right now it is just too new. Would recommend that if you ever decide to get one of these designer pets, cats in particular, these wild mixes, really be sure that this is going to fit in your lifestyle long term. If you have young children in the house, this might not be the right pet for you. So always do your homework. Talk to people who've owned one for a period of time to see if they're still enamored of having this wild mixed breed after they've had it for maybe 3, 4, 5 years. And if they do like it, go visit for a period of time. See if maybe you can borrow the kitty for a while. But do your homework, because it is a sad situation. It's not something that you can just dispose of, give away your problems to somebody else.
No,
and the dog agrees.
He does.
If Marianne, if somebody wanted to learn more about you and your pet column that you have in the Orange County Register, where should they go?
Well, they can buy the Register on Mondays, and we have 2 pets pages every Monday in our Life section. And they can also go online to www.ocregister.com and look for the pets page.
Marvelous. Well, we've been talking today to Marianne Dell of the Orange County Register. This is Dr. Bernadine Cruz. You've been listening to The Pet Doctor on PetLifeRadio.com with Puppy in the Back. Which pup is that?
That is Sly.
It's Sly. Well, hopefully.
That is my cat mix, Sly.
Hopefully Sly comes back next week to learn what more we have to say on The Pet Doctor. If you ever have questions, best thing to do is ask your primary care veterinarian. But you can always contact me at thepetdoctor@petliferadio.com, and I'll get back to you. So thanks again for listening. Have yourself a great evening. Take care. Bye-bye.
Pets can be a wonderful addition to your life. Because they're a member of the family, keeping them healthy and happy is important. Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor, with veterinary media consultant and veterinarian Dr. Bernadine Cruz. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile, or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets. On demand every week, only on PetLifeRadio.com.